Okay, I make that about time to get started. All right, welcome to this talk. It's my second of the day. And this one I'm going to dig a lot deeper into the topic of building universal apps for a Windows Phone and a Windows 8.1. So the topics for this one, first of all, just make sure we all understand what they are and what they aren't. Obviously, this is fairly new. I was just chatting to a friend of mine in the speaker room before that, and he was, you know, we were doing universal apps. He said, oh, I says, it feels like we've been doing this forever. But, you know, actually, most of us only got our hands on it fairly recently, but I suppose it's testament to the fact that it does work as a technology, that we're feeling pretty comfortable with it. But there's an awful lot about what if I've already got a Windows app and I want to make it universal, or I've got a phone app and I want to, you know, all these things. What can I share, what I can't share? So everybody's still trying to work out, oh, PCLs and this shared folder, when do I use one, when do I use another? So this is really trying to answer all of those questions, give you a work through a simple example. So I'm going to look at sharing strategies, techniques for sharing code, techniques for sharing XAML, finally state sharing. And those of you in this morning, I've got a demo. Well, it was working in the speaker room before, but I'm really no promises about this. I realized why the one didn't work this morning. It's because I had a phone and had a PC, of course, and they were supposed to be sharing state, but the phone was on the TechEd wireless network, which, as we all know, is wonderful. It works really well and it's fast. No, it didn't work. So anyway, that's what I'm going to do. So first of all, we'll start with what are universal... I didn't have my intro. Who are my slides? But I'm Andy Wigley, for those of you who don't know. I work for Microsoft in the UK. I'm a technical evangelist, do a lot of stuff with Corp. I come over here a lot. I do a lot of talks at these kind of shows. And I've just recorded the Windows Phone 8.1 Jumpstart series, which are all videos are all on Channel 9. I saw one of you's got an MVA thing here, so... Yeah, the MVA guys are on my back at the minute because I've got to write like gazillions of assessment questions for it, and it's like, oh, when do you want this? Oh, last week we'll do fine, they say. So, okay. So that's what I'm going to be doing tomorrow. Anyway, back to this. What are universal apps? So we've got this new converged platform with Windows Phone 8.1 where we have taken the Windows Store apps app development environment, and we've brought it down to the phone. So we've now got, for both of those platforms, exactly the same APIs and XAML and everything. So this picture is, first of all, those of you who came to me yesterday will have seen this already. This is a diagram of where we were with convergence with Windows Phone 8. So Windows Phone 8 is the kind of Windows runtime set, is the little red square circle there. And we had a little bit of convergence with the big blue circle, which is Windows RT on big Windows. And a little bit of convergence was like some Windows.storage, in-app purchase, some census stuff, and not a lot else. Speech, that was in there as well. And so, you know, a few bits and pieces, but not an awful lot. And then with Windows Phone 8.1 SDK release, which... I don't know if you picked up the news, the Visual Studio 2012-13 Update 2, which is the new tools, that went final yesterday. It's now finished and complete, and you can download the final version. So anyway, this for 8.1 is where we are now. Not completely converged, because there's a few kind of edge cases, there's a few controls that only make sense on the phone, and likewise a few bits and pieces that make sense on a tablet form factor. So there's a few differences, but the vast majority there, we're talking about over 90% convergence. That convergence is in two parts. There's the Windows Runtime APIs, which is all the kind of non-GUI stuff, all the geofencing, geopositioning, Bluetooth LE, all of the storage, the whole shooting match, everything that's not GUI. Then there's also Windows Runtime XAML. And Windows Runtime XAML means, yeah, sure, the XAML, but also the kind of application framework where it runs, the behavior, the sort of suspension and termination and all that kind of stuff. So there's a bit of that that's the GUI thing. And that's come down to phone as well. So when we look at what we've got for building apps for Windows Windows and Windows Phone 8.1. We've got all of these different kind of options for us. This is another way of looking at it. You can build native apps using pure HTML. So we've got HTML and JavaScript and our JavaScript library WinJS, which allows you to make calls interact with the Windows runtime. So that's an option for you. And then we've got Windows Runtime XAML, which you can use C++ as your language behind it. So that's a new one for phone. Obviously, we can do that on big Windows as well. It's all converged. Or you can use C# and VB, and obviously there's a little bit of a .NET CLR and the managed runtime of it that's involved with all of that. So those are your options for Windows Runtime XAML, which is the converged stack. And then we've still got Silverlight XAML, which is the legacy, if you like, the way what we've been using up to now. And that is still 100% supported. And in fact, a Silverlight 8.1 app gets access to all the non-GUI bits of the Windows runtime. So you're not shortchanged in any way. In fact, there's a few things you can only do in Silverlight you can't yet do in the Windows runtime, a few edge cases. So both cases are good, but what we're talking about when we talk about a truly universal app and what the templates are that we've been given in Visual Studio for universal apps is that bit in the middle. Well, and the bit on the left, actually. So you can build universal apps in HTML and JavaScript, but I'm going to concentrate on the XAML one. So we're working with Windows Runtime XAML and C#, VB, or whatever, C++. Now, you could build the same kind of thing as a universal app, if you like, with Silverlight, a Silverlight phone project, and a Windows Store app project for the two different platforms, and they could still share all that non-GUI Windows runtime stuff. It's just that the new project templates aren't in Visual Studio, don't give you that kind of straight off. Because we're concentrating on the tooling, is concentrating on sharing XAML and Windows runtime APIs. Yeah, so that's the Windows and Windows Phone bit that is really converged across both of them. And the Silverlight, we're talking about Windows Phone only stuff. And this is the universal apps bit that I'm going to concentrate on. So these are, what are universal apps then? Just to sort of summarize that. They are applications on the converged Windows 8.1 and Phone 8.1 platforms. And we've got project templates in Visual Studio that help you get started with that. Or indeed, you can take an existing Windows Store app and add a Windows Phone 8.1 project to it, convert it into a universal project. Or you can take you can create a new Windows Phone runtime 8.1 app and add a Windows Store head to it as well. So all of these options are possible. So to do that, you just simply right-click on your project, and there's an option on the context menu, which is add the other platform. And then you'll get a little pop-up window, and it'll say, oh, what I'm going to do is give you a shared project where you can have shared stuff. And I'm also going to add, in this case, a phone project to your solution. So you'll end up with three different projects. So you end up with a Windows head, a Windows phone head, and then this shared folder where your shared stuff can go. Right, so let's look at a specific example. Are you getting the sound all right? Sounds like it's dropping out for me. Is it all right? Okay, good. I'll carry on. So this is actually a Windows app that I'm going to show you when I press the button. So let's just run it first. You can see it working. Actually, this is an old favorite. Has anybody ever come across Field Tracker? It's a sample that's been... Yeah, a few of you are nodding. It's a sample that's been around forever. It was used as an example of how to build it was actually, I think it may even have turned up as a old school Silverlight, you know, browser plugin that we don't talk about anymore. But there certainly was a sample for, an example of building a simple app for Windows Phone 7. It's been around forever. And I've used it a few times. And it's good for this as well. So the idea here is that you get this, when you first time you run it, you get this nice page up. And then you can, we can create ourselves a car. So we want to add a car in here. So my car is a Jaguar, I wish. When I bought it, the initial odometer is like 1,000 miles, and then we can choose a picture. I don't think I've got any pictures of cars, so let's have one of me rock climbing. There we go. There we go. That's fine. But it's meant to be a picture of your car, of course. And then what you can do is add fill-ups to it. So the idea is every time you go to a gas station, fill up, you say, okay, now I've actually done 1,500 miles, and I've just put 20 gallons in, and the price of that was $4. Is that about right? I don't know. It's close enough. Okay, and then you get history on the right, as you can see, and you get your miles per gallon, and then we can do another one. So that's kind of nice and simple. Add another one. This time I've now done 2,000. I've put 25, and the price was, I don't know, found a better deal. And so we go on, and then you can just keep a track of your fuel usage and check your fuel efficiency, and that's all very nice. So this is my starting app, very simple. It's got an object in it called a car object. But what is interesting about this app is that it's actually a properly structured app. It uses MVVM, and it's got services in it, and I've got view models, and here's my car object, which is a serializable thing which has got lots of properties on it. It's got a name property, and it's got a bunch of other, it's got name, last fill up, picture, so you can see this represents a car object, and this is the state of our app, and we're serializing that object and storing it away in the local folder. Nice and easy. But it is a nicely well-structured, we've got nice data binding from our views. I've got three views here. You saw there, the summary page was the initial one, and then I've got two other pages, which is the car details one and the fill-up page. So this is my starting point. So I want to create a phone version of this. So let's go ahead and do that. So I'm going to right-click on the project. So at the moment, just got this one project in it. I right-click on it and say, add a Windows Phone 8.1. And we got this pop-up says, to add it, we're going to add two new projects, a new Windows Phone 8.1 project and a new shared project. And additionally, a reference to the shared project is this now has a reference to our shared project in our head. But actually, and we've got a phone one, which has kind of got a few bits and pieces. It's got a main page and an app.xaml. Absolutely nothing to start with in the shared folder. So let's start in doing this conversion by looking at our Windows 8.1 project and sort of move some stuff into the shared folder. Now, I have to admit, of course, I've stacked all the cards in my favor. I'd be stupid not to. This is why it's well factored, and it is a good starting point. If you're using nice architecture and you've got your nice view models and your views nicely separated, that's a good place to start from. Because immediately you've got all this, you're stacking the odds in your favor. It's easier to share stuff where you haven't got your views have all got loads of code behind. So this is a well structured thing. So let's see. Assets, no, because assets is kind of art. That's tiles and stuff. Common, yeah, that's all kind of common stuff. That can go down. I've got converters. Yeah, that can go down as well. So design, time, data, images. I've got some services. View models, those are my, the objects in the background that maintain the state behind the page and serve the data up. Yeah, absolutely, they can go. Not the views for now. App.xaml, that probably can. This can, not the key, not the app manifest, not the NuGetPackages.config thing, but that and that, and all of that, we can drag and drop, and I'll hold shift down, which will move it into the shared project. Right. So there we go, that's into the shared project. So actually now, that means all of that stuff is going to be included in the phone project and the Windows project. I've just moved app.xaml down to here, so I'm going to delete the one from the phone project, because otherwise we'll have two of them. So that's no good. I will leave the views there. Let's see what else. App.xaml.cs. In actual fact, and this is kind of just a bit of knowledge, this was a Windows one, okay? Nothing wrong with it, except that if we create, I'm just going to start a new instance of Visual Studio. Actually, I've got this one. Let's create a new project on here. Let's create ourselves a universal hub app. And the reason for why I want to do this is because I want to steal the app.xaml.cs from it. Because when you create a universal project, it already has the right kind of structure in it. So this is app.xaml.cs. It's got some hashifdefs. There's some phone stuff that phone apps like to have, but Windows ones don't. All about animations. There's another bit there, which is all about turnstile navigation on startup, this kind of thing. So basically what I want to do is take this app class, copy it from here, and actually we're done with that now, so I can close it, and replace the one that's in here, which didn't have any customizations. Oh, there we go. Replace it with the one that's got all the hashifdefs in it. The only thing I need to change, I think, is where the initial page, because it goes to, this is the initial navigation, goes to a type of hub page. But actually in this app, it needs to go to the home page, if you like, is weirdly not called main page. I don't know why. It's actually summary page, but okay, we'll go with that. Summary page. Right, so let's build and see how we're doing. Probably not very well at this point. Yes, lots of errors. Okay, we got some Gala soft. JSON.net. So what we need to do is add references in here to JSON.net and also to another library which I'm using. Which is, so there's JSON.net. Install that into my phone project, because that's required by the common code. And also there's, I'm using a framework that I particularly like, called MVVM Lite. And I'm going to install the libraries only, because there's a kind of a bigger version of it. I'm just using the dependency injection and some of the kind of relay command classes that are in that. That's the references, so we should be getting a bit better. Okay, yes, now, the views are not right, of course. So, and that one, I need to fix up a reference to that. So that should be all right for that. So app.xaml. Yeah, I have no views in my phone. Well, I've got this one. Now, let's have a look at the views. I want to get rid of main page, because I want this kind of reuse as much as possible. Now, in the Windows project, I've got this views folder. And I've got three views in it, summary page, fill-up page, and car details page. Now, actually, car details page and fill-up page are probably reusable. They're very simple views. So let's drag all of that down to the shared as well. So that actually copies it. I didn't do shift, just for speed. And then I'm going to leave those two in it and delete that. So summary page stays in the Windows project. That goes, and that goes. So that should be all good, all right, and everything should work in that. And let's build the UI for the main UI for the phone project. Now I'm going to copy the views folder into the phone project as well. So now I've got two summary pages, but this one, which is obviously the one from my Windows project, is not really what I want for a phone solution. Now, this is a good example of thinking about... Oh, that's not very good. Make that a bit bigger. Maybe it's 66. There we go. That can do. Actually, what I want is... Before I do some design, let's just build... and run this, build the Windows 8 one, make sure that's still working after I've moved everything around. No errors, I can probably run it, just to prove that we've not broken anything. Yeah, it's all still looking good. Yep, absolutely, we're back where we were, cool. Fine. But that one was three kind of panels across a landscape orientation. Now, I was thinking, actually, let's think about this for the phone. What do I want to do with this? And this is where you want to start thinking about sharing XAML. You also need to think about the usage scenario. So the way that a user tends to use a tablet, they tend to hold it like that. I mean, okay, smaller ones, they might hold them portrait. But they tend to hold them in landscape and swipe across ways. And it's designed for that, this UI is designed for that. Now, what's the analogy for that on a phone? Well, actually, I think a pivot might go quite nicely on a phone here. So I want a different UI that makes more sense for the phone than I do on the tablet. And this is kind of when you're thinking about sharing XAML. These are one of the things that you want to think about. So let's actually do that. Where's my thing? Oh, wrong machine. Look at the wrong machine. Okay, here we go. So I don't like this one. What I'm going to do is take out all of that, all the contents for the time being, and then I'm going to sort of put it back in, if you like. Delete. So now I've got an empty page. Still got my app bar, though. I've got all the other stuff. And instead, I'm going to create myself a pivot. So pivot title equals, I should use a static resource really, but let's just type it in. Fuel tracker. So there's my pivot title. And I need some pivot items for the different panes. So we're going to have a pivot item. That one will be the header. First header is the car. And there we go. And let's just copy and paste that three times. And then this one will be last fill up, the middle pane. And this one will be history. So we're building ourselves a nice UI. Now, so actually, the original UI wasn't a million miles away from what I wanted, so let's go and steal some stuff from that. So this one, the Windows one, actually was structured as a grid with a stack panel in it containing kind of three islands of information. So this is the first one, car, photo, and name, so I'm going to copy that and paste that directly into here. That's the first one. Last fill-up. I can go off and get that one as well. So here's the last fill-up one. So let's have that one. And paste that into here. And the last one is this one. So let's have that one. I'm not going to do the instruction panel just for time, but so I think we've probably got a UI that, might just work. So let's just see, let's have a go at running this and see what happens. I'm going to change the startup project. We've got nice tooling in here. I could right-click in Solution Explorer, but we've got tooling up there to change the startup project. Let's try running this on the emulator. And, okay, so we've got, initially we need to create ourselves a... this is our first problem. I've got an exception because it says can't find a resource with the name key navigation back button normal style. What's this about? Well, what's happened here is that those shared pages, I was just trying to go to the car details page. It's a shared page, and at this block up here is actually the back button that you see on the on the top of the page in the Windows app. And we don't have, we don't want that in a phone project. So I'm just going to comment it out for now. And we'll come back and fix it properly in a minute. There we go. What the problem is that it doesn't like this static resource navigation back button style. So let's just comment it out, and then we'll fix it later on. And the same for fill-up page as well. So that has the same problem as that back button on it. So there we go. So this is in the shared thing, but of course we've broken the Windows one now, so we're kind of, it's almost a backward step. But let's get the phone one working, and then we're going to be hopefully in pretty good shape to carry on. Yeah, okay, let's, a car. Okay, and it's a Jaguar, and it's got 1,000 miles on it, and we can choose a picture. Ah, okay, here's another problem. We got an exception, which is the request is not supported. What's all that about? Okay, well, actually, what happened here is we revealed one of the APIs that's not the same on Windows and Windows Phone. This one has a special usage on Windows Phone, which is there's not many of these, but there's a few. Those of you who came to my networking talk this morning will have seen the same with the web authentication broker. So there's some of these things that call out to other services to do stuff for it. They have a different way of operating on Windows Phone than they do on big Windows. And this is entirely to ensure good performance on low memory devices, these 512 meg phones. So in actual fact, when we pick, file open picker will still work on the phone, but we have to use it, code it slightly differently. So I won't do that now. We'll struggle on, and we'll just not choose a picture because it's kind of optional at the moment. I'll fix it in a moment. So let's try that again. It's a Jaguar, and then it's 1,000, 10,000, whatever. And then we say tick. Yeah, good. And we can now add a fill up. So we can go fill up. 1,500. 15,000. Well, whatever. Okay, 20 gallons, and it cost us $50 a gallon. Use your imagination here. Now, I could save it on this sort of thing, but actually, what happens now is here's another problem. If I hit the back button, okay, there's a problem. The app closes. So again, we've just uncovered another little something we have to handle, some little difference between the two platforms that we need to do something about, which I will do in a minute, because we're doing pretty well. It's now time to go and have a cup of tea, put your feet up, and think about what you've just done, and then plan your next plan of action for this and see what you're going to do next. So, because I want to talk about what we saw there before we fix those problems. Now, so first of all, you can see that a universal app isn't an app at all. It's actually a solution that contains two projects. In actual fact, you know, have any of you tried to build a build for both with a Windows Phone 8 and a Windows Store app? Have any of you tried that? Yeah, so you know all about it. It's kind of, well, you need to use MVVM. I'll let you into a secret. This app, I did, at TechEd 2012, this same fuel tracker, as a build for both between Silverlight, Windows Phone Silverlight, and Windows Store apps. And I've kind of started with the solution, and I'm backtracking a bit. But so, I mean, again, I can drill home that message. However way you do this, whether it's with Windows Phone Silverlight, which you can do, or with this, where you can share a huge amount more, it's much, much easier now. You still need to have your well-organized, well-factored solution, nice VMs and MVVM and all this kind of thing. And that makes the job much easier. So we're still with universal apps, we're still creating two outputs, and we're still going to have two things to upload to the store. In fact, we're still dealing with two stores at the moment. But the difference is that shared code down there and the WinRT is so much kind of fatter. You've got much more we can do. So, yeah, how much can I share? So let's drill into that a little bit. So we've got our XAML UI, and we've got logic, we've got data. This is obviously the typical sort of tiers of an app. We've got our views, and the question is, okay, how much of the XAML can we share? The view models, how much of that can we actually kind of merge together and share? And what about the model, the data? Again, how much of that can we bring together? So that's really what I'm going to kind of drill into in the next part of this talk. So first of all, let's look at the code sharing. So I'm going to do code sharing, then I'm going to do XAML. I don't know why I did it that way around, actually, to be honest, but that's the way it ended up. And then data. So starting with just the WinRT, the code, the VMs, the non-GUI bits of it. Well, we've got this shared project. And as you've seen, we can put loads of stuff in there. We can put code files, we can put images, we can put design data, classes, loads of stuff. Pretty much most file types can go in there, and obviously anything that ends up in the shared project ends up being copied into both, if you like. So when it gets compiled, each head gets compiled, everything that's in the shared folder ends up in both. But essentially, actually, although it looks like three projects, it's still not really. It's two projects with a big shared area that looks like a project, but that doesn't actually have independently a compiled output. You had a question?
Yeah, I was just going to ask that. Is there a DLL?
Yeah, so there's no compiled output from the shared from the shared folder. So actual fact, all that the shared project is a new way of doing what we've always done, which is add as link, right? And I've got add as link on the bottom there. You can still do that. So add as link, if you haven't done that, you know, you can, whenever you right click and say add an existing file, you go off and find a file. And normally, if you just select the file, it will take a copy of that file and stick it in your project. But actually, there's a little drop down box next to the add button, and one thing is add as link. So it actually keeps the one physical copy of it and takes a link to it. That's all this shared project is. It's just a new way of representing that with some tooling that makes it easier to handle it. So, shared project, add as link, same thing. And then we've got this other option, which is to have class libraries. And most, this is at the moment a fairly simple project, but most kind of any project that's got any complexity in it, you will want to have different class libraries. It just kind of naturally happens. And we can support that. It's actually PCLs, which were a bit sort of specialist in the past, but PCLs are kind of the new general class library for these kind of apps. And I'll show you an example in a minute. So yeah, so this shared thing, no binary output. You can put anything in there, code files, XAML, resources, XML, JSON files, anything can go in there, and that gets shared up into the two heads there. These portable class libraries for Windows Universal apps, well, these have always had, whenever you have a PCL, it used to actually ask you when you create it, what platforms you want to support, and there's lots of boxes you can select, and basically it will take the lowest common denominator of all the platforms you select. Now, when you add a PCL to a universal solution, it doesn't ask you up front, it just automatically puts it in and selects Windows 8.1 and Windows Phone 8.1 as the two targets. And the difference from PCLs in the old days, which was only kind of .NET stuff, is now all of that Windows runtime stuff is supported in them as well. So they are the new general class library for universal apps. You can still, obviously, expand it out to other platforms as well, if it makes sense. Now, the other thing that's interesting is if you go into the properties of a PCL, you can have the output type can be a class library, or you can select it to be a Windows runtime component. So that means it actually becomes, your class library then becomes something that can be consumed from JavaScript and C++ as well as C# and VB. So it becomes truly portable. So PCLs are really for your generic reusable stuff on the whole. I mean, yeah, you can use them as well just because you prefer to structure your solution like that when it starts getting complicated and you have different projects that are different bits of your solution. That's a kind of personal preference for how you organize it. But the kind of primary case for using them is some generic stuff that you intend to reuse. My services, I'm going to drill into that a bit more. The services I've got built into this solution is I've got a navigation service and a dialogue service and this sort of thing, which are there so that when I write unit tests, I can mock them so they don't get in the way. But those are absolutely a case of a generic reusable thing. I'll use them over and over in every solution I build. So they're a good example. And you got, yeah, broad targeting for Windows Phone 8 and .NET as well. Add as link, yeah, we can still do that. It is the same as the shared project, but we can still do that if you prefer. It makes sense. And I've already kind of, this slide is just there to remind you again that all of this stuff becomes much easier if you have got a nice MVVM architecture and solution. You've got your views are very thin and they're just about showing the UI to the user and getting the input from the user, but then they don't do anything, any processing. There's no business logic in there. They simply hand it off to your view model and the view model contains your business logic. So you're decoupling your UI, the simple presentation, from how your app works. And again, this makes perfect sense in a universal app where we've got a Windows head and a Windows Phone head. We want to have the logic all in the shared area and these thin views in the particular head. So what we're driving for. Okay, so next, let's just have a quick look at that PCLs thing. Oh, where's my glasses? There we go. So I said that I've got all these services in here. So let's go off and let's add this solution. Add myself a new project. And I'm going to add a class library, which is straight away is in the menu of things that you are likely to want to add to this kind of solution. A class library, portable for universal apps. Now, first of all, for reasons I'll explain in a minute, I'm going to have one called Service Interfaces. I'll create it first. You see, no dialogue, it's just boom. But actually, if I go into Properties, you can see that this targets Windows 8.1 and Windows Phone 8.1. Now, what am I going to put in here? Well, I said that I've already got this. I've got this idea concept of services in here. I've got a lot of services in my solution. I have an iDialog service, which just shows messages. It's so a VM can pop a pop-up message on the screen. And a VM doesn't really have this concept of UI. So the whole point of MVVM is that your views are data bound to your VM. The VM exposes properties and things, but has no idea who is consuming it, who is kind of bound to it. So there's this decoupling, and this is kind of the key thing about the architecture. Now, reason why I kind of split this thing out, I want my VM to be able to pop up a message saying, oh, wrong, do something again, this sort of thing. But I don't want it to, you know, I don't want to spoil its purity as a code-only logic thing. So in my view models, let's have a look at a car details page view model. And this is where the magic happens that I'm not going to talk about, but here's my constructor, which has in its constructor, it takes an iData service, an iNavigation service, an iDialog service, an iViewModelState service. So I inject these services into it, and I use a technique called dependency injection, which I'm definitely not going to go into in this, but this is a key ingredient in this as well. And this is why I'm using MVVM Lite, which has all this stuff in it. Now, the reason why I do this is because I can then write unit tests. There are none in this solution because I haven't written any. But let's find a reference to my... let's have a look for the navigation service. Find all references to my iNavigation service. Oh, well, loads of them. So I've got navigation service, go back. So it allows me to put navigation stuff into my VM. But here's the beauty of it. When I write a unit test, I can inject into it not the proper navigation service that really would try to do frame.go back, but something, just a no-op. I could put mocks in, yeah? So these services are really useful for this kind of thing. And what I want to do is, at the moment, they're all in my shared project, but that's not really where I want them to be. What I want is to put them out into reusable PCLs. So what I need from that, I'm going to move out iDialog service, iNavigation service, and what are the other generic ones? iViewModelState service, and then I've got a couple that are classes that are actually associated with my dialog thing. And all of those, I'm going to move them down and stick them into here. Shift, moving them. There we go, and remove the default class it put into me when it created it. So this is now my service interfaces. Now, this is just a set of interfaces. This isn't actually the implementation. This is absolutely reusable. In fact, it's so reusable, I probably can reuse it on, certainly on Windows 8, yeah. I can certainly include Silverlight in there. Let's have the whole lot. So Windows Phone Silverlight 8, probably Silverlight 5 as well. Let's have them all. Right, there we go. So this is totally reusable, my interfaces. Is now reusable across. I can take this and use it in loads of other projects. Doesn't matter what the target is. And I want another one. This one is the implementation specifically for these kind of universal apps. So let's add another new project. And it's going to be another class library. And this one I'm going to call the... what do I call it? The... I can't find my notes. Where's my notes gone? Oh yeah, here we go. Services implementation for WinRT8.1. And this one I am going to keep it as being it is going to be a targeted, I'm going to keep the target of this to be the two that we've got, just Windows 8.1 and Windows Phone 8.1. And I'm going to have implementations in here of those services. And this is, I'm moving all this stuff out just so I can reuse it again. So there's my implementation of the dialog service, there's my implementation of the navigation service, and there is that one. The other one, the data service stays in, Oh, no, hang on, the navigation service can't because that references views that are in my thing. So these two I can move across, drag them down, stick them into my implementation, shift. Okay, that's good. I'll need to add a reference to this to the interfaces one because obviously those classes reference those interfaces. They implement those interfaces. And those that should build. Let's just build that. Oh, I've got to add JSON.net to it again. Manage NuGet packages. JSON.net. Install that. And that's a good one. And that should build now. Build. Okay. Now, so then I just need to add a reference to both of my heads to my reusable portable class libraries. And this one as well, add a reference to my portable class libraries. And if the gods are with us, it should still run. I've just been moving stuff around, but there we go, fuel tracker. That's all, everything's good. All's good in our world, and we're starting to see the value of PCLs, and we're starting to get some good structure into all of this. Right. So that was PCLs. Where's my clicker? There we go. And I'm now going to fix these other problems that we had working with the shared code files. So yeah, WinRT, the Windows runtime implementation. We got this, you know, all that nicely big converged circles. We've got all this common WinRT, and it's like 90-95% the same. But there are a few little bits that are a bit different. These are the bits, you know, where they didn't quite align those circles. These are the bits that are different. On Windows, we've got search contract, multiple windows, resizable windows. We don't have any of that on Windows Phone. On the phone, there's the Action Center APIs, there's status bar, back key handling. So a few little bits. It's not a lot. And also not included on there. So there's also some stuff that's have some APIs may have slightly different behavior. And this is like the file open picker, the web authentication broker, things like that, where we've got this weird and continue thing to make sure that these APIs work well on low memory devices. So yeah, these are examples. Everything else is unified. So files and settings, store, lifecycle, notification, sensors, network, localized, loads of stuff. With that 90%, most of your code is just going to be shared and you're not going to have any problems at all running it in both of them. But here we go. This is the file open picker. This is the difference in the usage. This is one of these kind of ones where we do diverge. So on the left, you've got the way it works in Windows, where you just new up a file open picker. You say, oh, I want to go to the pictures library. I want to pick a picture. So you put a filter on there. You say, I want JPEGs or PNGs. And then you call await open picker.pick single file async. And the file open picker window comes up. Your code, your app is still running. It's just waiting for the result to come back. The user, so it's just like a modal dialog pops up. Except it's not. It's full screen, of course, with a Windows Store app, but it's the same as an old modal dialog. And then when the user's picked a file, we just carry on. And you do something with the file. Now, not on Windows Phone, unfortunately. We can't support that model because there are cases where that just won't work on a low-memory device because the file open picker itself needs quite a lot of memory to run. So we cannot keep our phone app in memory while the user is using the file open picker UI. It will be suspended. So we need a slightly different model to support this. So what actually happens is, yeah, you do the initial bit much the same, new up your file open picker, set your filters, and then there's a new method called pick single file and continue. And at that point, your app suspends. And the user goes off and uses the UI, they pick a file, and at that point, your app gets reactivated, and we have to do some code to handle it. So I'll show you that in a minute. There are also, just worth calling out, I'm not going to show that in this, but there's a few APIs where it's just different. We just have not got convergence, and we are talking about a few. For example, I've picked out one example here, with mapping. Well, geolocation is exactly the same APIs. Geofencing is exactly the same API, so that's all good news. Geodata, we've got a slight problem here. We've got a location object on Windows and geopoint objects on Windows Phone. I like to joke that actually this is a case of Windows Phone has converged ahead of Windows, and they'll catch up with us in due course, you know. And then the map control, it's a whole different control, unfortunately. On big Windows, it's the Bing Maps control, and on Windows Phone, we got the latest, newest iteration of what kind of used to be the Here Maps control. But this is new WinRT map control. I'd expect that one will come to Windows in due course. But so here, you can still absolutely build a universal app, but you have to be a little bit, you know, a little bit more fancy footwork in order to convert between incompatible types. And there was a great example of this. If you're interested in mapping, check out the Jumpstart session on mapping, where we've got a great sample that does all this for you. It's a universal app, and it does all the conversion. So check that out. So what about these techniques for handling these universal differences? Well, we've got hashif, compiler conditionals, of course. So we can have code that, when it's shared, is only going to, one version of it will execute when we're running on Windows, and another version of it will run when we're running on Windows Phone. We can also use inheritance, or we can use partial classes. Let's just drill down a little bit more into those. So, yeah, hashif, we already have in the universal app, whenever we've got these two heads. The Windows one has already got a compiler conditional in, which is Windows app, Windows underscore app. And the phone head already has a compiler preconditional in, which is a symbol defined, which is Windows underscore phone underscore app. So those are in, and you can create your own, but those are ready for you to use. So you can use hashif to say, oh, do this if you're running on Windows, do something else if you're on phone. Oh, there we go. Windows app or Windows phone app. Good example, the hardware back button. We saw that it doesn't work at the moment, so I'm going to fix that in just a moment. So you have something like this, it's hashif Windows phone app, then we need to hook up the hardware buttons.back pressed event so that we can handle the hardware back key properly. Another technique you can think of using, you could have a base class in the shared folder, right? And then in the platform-specific project, you can have a class that inherits from that base class. So it gets all the goodness of the base class, which is all common code, and then you can override methods perhaps in the phone version, in the phone child or the Windows child, or indeed implement extra methods if you so wish. So that's a technique you can use as well. That's really great for separating features that are specific to individual platforms. And as the slide says, you can make methods abstract. You can force them to be overridden, if you like, in the child class to avoid inadvertent errors with this. So that's a really nice technique, and it ends up with nice-looking code that kind of you can understand well. You can also use partial classes and methods. So partial classes is where you actually can spread the definition of a class across multiple files. So again, you could have the common functionality, the methods and everything in a partial class in the shared folder, and then have different other partial classes, other physical files with other bits of the same class, but they're situated in the platform-specific ones. And the compiler just takes all of those files and at compile time merges it all together, and you just get one object that gets compiled. So that's another technique you can use. So here's an example of partial classes where we've got a base class, which is a thing called data source, and you just mark it with this partial qualifier on the class definition. And then we've got a method called retrieve folders. I mean, this is an arbitrary example. And then in the Windows Phone project, we've got another little bit of data source, which has an alternative method called load folders. That's perhaps not a very good example, but you can just see how it works. Compiles it all together, you end up with, in the Phone project, an object called data source, which has two methods in it called retrieve folders and load folders. And, you know, so you've kept that separate, though, from the Windows one that doesn't need it for whatever reason. All right, so let's use that knowledge that we've just looked at and fix those problems that we had with the phone project. So I'll put the screen on in a minute. I've not forgotten you. I was forgetting you all this morning. I was happily coding away and nobody could see what I was doing. Okay. This is a version that I have. I'm not going to code anymore. I'm just going to show you the bits and pieces. So first of all, you saw the back key problem we had, the hardware back handling. So if we go off now and look at the new version of, here's my shared, oh no, not the view models. Here's my shared views. Go off to fillup.page.xaml.cs. And we've now got some hash if in here. So, oh, by the way, in case you're not sure about these, if you go into properties on things and you go to the build, there are the conditional compilation symbols that are defined up there. So there's the Windows Phone App one that's defined for Windows. And obviously the Windows 8 one has Windows App, also has this NetFX core, which seems to be a convention. It's been around forever. So that's where those are defined. So in that fill-up page, we can make use of that. And this is, again, some of the tooling we've got in Visual Studio now makes this a bit easier to visualize. So we've got hash if Windows Phone App, and it's grayed out at the moment, because at the moment we're looking at what the Windows head will see, because this is what is going to be compiled to the Windows. So if we want to look at what happens when we go to the phone one, we can click up there, and it changes the scope that we're looking at this shared file. So that was something in the old days, without us link, there was no tooling to help you with that, and it got a bit confusing sometimes. Well, you'd opened it in one project, and then you'd try and edit it in another one, and it wouldn't let you. So much better now. Oh, sure, yes. So this file is in the shared folder. This fill-up, what we're looking at here is something that's in the shared project. So this is one of the shared files, fill-up page and its backing file. And then along the top here, in the code editor in the past, I wonder if that goes away. It probably will go away. Let's open one that's unique to... So this one is... Okay, no, this one is only in the Windows Phone project, so... Now, along the top, we've got this kind of scope bar where we can say, which project are we looking at this file? How does this project see this file? So this one is only in the Windows Phone project, so the only option is Windows Phone. But the fillup.page.xaml.cs is in the shared project, so actually it's going to be compiled into both. So you can switch between the Windows head. And you see it's greying out that, because Windows Phone App isn't defined in the Windows head. Or the Windows Phone head, where it's included, because that's how the Windows Phone App will, when it's compiled for Windows Phone, will see it. So when it's compiled for Windows Phone, we're going to have that using statement's going to be included. I'll come back to the Visual State Manager in a moment. And in our on Navigated 2, this is going to be included. But this doesn't make sense for Windows, but that will be excluded for Windows. And then we error. Oh, my goodness me. Unhook the backpressed in on navigated from, but the important thing is the backpress. This event handler here is what actually the code we want to execute when somebody presses the hardware back button. And first of all, in this event handler, we set on the backpressed event hard, so we set handle to true, which just tells the shell, don't worry, we're handling this. You don't have to, because the normal usage are with Windows Runtime Xaml apps, when you hit the back button is to suspend the app, which is why it closed. So you can just say, don't suspend it, I'm on it. And then actually what we do is, well, in this case, because it's MVVM, I'm going to get the data context of the page, which is our VM, and execute a save command, a relay command on it, which happens to do some logic validation and then navigates back, uses my navigation service. And the same thing happens in the car details page, has the same kind of stuff in it. So that's kind of on the code. Oh, yeah, and then what about the car details page has this file picker stuff. Here we go. So this is the photo button. If you want to take a picture. If it's a Windows app, we just call await openpicker.picksinglefileasync, and then we call this method called file openpickerContinuation, which is just below. But if it's a Windows Phone app, well, we call the alternative variant of it, which is pick single file and continue. And after we call that, our app is going to be suspended. So, and then we go off and do the picking of the file, and then we come back, and then our app will be reactivated. So in app.xaml.cs, again, we've got some platform-specific code, which, here we go. If it's a Windows Phone app, so this is all grayed out if we're talking about the Windows one. None of this applies. But if it's a Windows Phone, when it's a Windows Phone app, then we are overriding the onActivated method. We're looking for being activated for a file open picker continuation. So this is the shell is reactivating us to handle this picked file. Then there's lots of logic which is standard bootstrapping, build a frame and make sure everything's in it. That's standard stuff. But this is where it kind of gets interesting again, down here. Then we send, we're navigating to our car details page again, which is where we called the old file open picker from. We're navigating to it. And then before this method finishes executing, we get the frame.content, which is now our page, because after we navigate to it, it fills the frame with that page. And we look for a property on it called file picker event. And we stick our file open picker continuation event args into that property. And then we just let the whole thing run. So in our... And then we on that page, file open picker, car details page, we've got a property up the top here. Here it is, Windows Phone app. Property called the file picker event. This is the one we just set from our app.xaml.cs. And in the setter, well, what we do is we look into that args, get the file out of it. This is the file the user's picked. And then we call that file open picker continuation. So at this point, we're back down here, and we've merged back into the flow that was for the Windows app. So yeah, it's a little bit messy, but you know, there's not a huge number of APIs that work like this. We've got these and continue turn up with these similar kind of operations. So that's the photo. What about the layout as well? I've actually done some stuff to fix the layout. So because the layout was, you know, it's all right. Let's have a look at car details page. That's what it looks like for the phone. One thing I don't actually know, and somebody might help me, is how to get it to show in a shared, when it's in the universal folder. I want to see it how it looks like on the tablet, because this is shared after all. So unfortunately, there's nothing on the device tab that helps you out like that. Oh. Nothing at all on device tab. There we go. So, yeah, that's kind of weird. Anyway, nothing on there.
It's the drop-down that you showed before for the context drop-down.
In the designer? Oh, you have to go to the code behind?
No, just drop that drop-down at the top.
Oh, it's there. Thank you, Jerry. You see, good job you're here watching. Yeah. Awesome. There we go. So, there you are. Actually, I've learned something. It's so good. You never stop learning, do you? So, yeah, I mean, you know, that kind of looks all, it won't win any awards. That's not the point of this, right? But it's okay for that. And then, as I've always known and just forgot for a minute, you can switch to look what it looks like in the phone. And, it sucks a bit because the title's over there. The reason why is because we commented out that back button, if you remember. So, but actually, I've brought the back button back in. And I've cheated a little bit because I've taken this on. So here's my back button. Let's get some space. It's back in again. And if you remember, that style wasn't recognized before. So I commented it out just as a quick fix. Well, it's back in. So, okay, well, what have I done here? Well, what I've done is this. I've added to both heads a dictionary, a style dictionary. So this is the Windows one. Actually hasn't got anything in it, a resource dictionary. It's empty. But I've added it in because both heads have got to have it because this one has got some stuff in it. Actually, it's only got one thing in it. I've defined that missing style, navigation back button, normal style. And actually, all I've done is set the visibility property to be collapsed because I don't want it in the phone. It doesn't make sense in the phone. And then in my app.xaml, I have merged in custom dictionary.xaml. Remember, this is a shared one, so that's why I had to have a custom dictionary in both heads. So I've merged in a dictionary. Well, the Windows one doesn't do anything, but the phone one allows us to use that, put that button back in, but effectively it's going to be disappeared. Now, the other thing I've done as well is, that's a good starting point, allows it to run, but again, the layout was kind of a bit, not great. So I've also, what I did was over in my car details page, I went over to Blend, and, let's install some Visual Studio updates. No, let's not do that now. And here's my, let's go to Device tab, let's go to, so we're in, This is the one where I don't know how to switch between the two, actually. Well, I didn't know how to do it in Visual Studio, to be quite honest. But this is what it looks like in the tablet. And there must be a way of doing it in Blend, I'd guess, but I don't know how to do it. But what I want is a special layout for the phone, for this shared XAML. So I can use something called Visual State Manager. That's quite a nice way of doing this. So this is my kind of default state, is the Windows state, it just so happens. Now, I have gone up to states, and before I went playing with this, I had this was just the base state, because I didn't have any visual states. And then what I did was I added a new state. And you can add extra states. I can add another state to it. There's another one. Which you can then give it a name. I don't know. I call it a new state. And you can create multiple ones of these. Actually, I don't want that one. So get rid of it. But this is now the Windows Visual State. And you can change properties in the State Manager, which will apply only when you switch to that visual state. Use the Visual State Manager. In actual fact, the Windows Visual State is the same as my base state. I've got nothing in there, but the phone visual state, you see that red square around it? I'm recording stuff. You'll notice actually everything's been moved over, because what I've done is I've changed my design to be more appropriate. It's showing in a Windows kind of display. I mean, we can cheat a bit and kind of make it look portrait, so it's kind of like that, but you know, you get the idea. So I've created those visual states, so I've tweaked my design, and then let's not save any of that. And then in my code behind, here we go. In the constructor, I just have a, if we're Windows app, go to state Windows Visual State. If we're a phone app, go to phone Visual State. So now you can actually have platform-specific layouts quite easily, but with a shared XAML file. Although, I feel obliged to tell you, to just remind you at this point, that actually shared XAML files are not going to be the answer for everything. And if you have anything more complex than this, you could end up tying yourself in knots unnecessarily. So it may well be that separate XAML files for your two heads actually makes more sense. That's a decision you have to make. Or you want a completely different style, like I've done with the initial page, which is a pivot of various, against a horizontal layout. So actually, I think we're probably in good shape, and we can run our phone one, and everything will be good. Oh, that's a very nice picture, yes. Choose another picture. Let's take another picture. Yeah, that's okay. Actually, unfortunately, it's exactly the same as the previous picture, but there you go. So we can, obviously, everything works on that, and our back button, oh, yes, it all works, beautiful. And then we can add a fill up, 1,500. Let's say we put 20 gallons into it, and we have got a price of four bucks per gallon. Save that. Oh, I've still got a bug in here. That's not quite what I expected. Oh, dear. Okay, so, well, still a little bit of work needed, but that was disappointing. I'm sure the next one works, to be honest. This is the hazard. I was improving this before I came in here. Don't ever do that. Damn. So anyway, it basically works, and I've got nice layout. So apart from a little bit of debugging I need to do, we're in pretty good shape now. Next. Oh, I jumped ahead of myself. Okay, so yeah, the sharing the XAML, reminder the form factor and usage matter. So again, just remember that the way that a phone is going to be used in a tablet, you may even perhaps want to have not expose all the features of the tablet version on the phone. That might make sense. You know, these are just decisions you've got to make about it. So just remind yourself that these are different devices with slightly different usage scenarios. We've got all these XAML controls on phone, 8.1, so a lot of the stuff you can have shared XAML. So a lot of the buttons and things are actually the same rendering, whether they're running it's on the tablet or it's on the phone. And some of them you might want to program differently. The hub control is a great example, where you might have a big hero image when you have it coming up on the tablet, but with the phone you get straight down to business, and it's still a hub control with all the richness that encapsulates, but the layout is slightly different. There's some controls, like the date picker and command bar, this sort of thing, the app bar, that is. Actually, you program the same, but when at runtime, when it renders, they actually render in a platform-specific way. So this is the control smart enough to do the right thing for the platform it's running on. So that's pretty nice as well. So again, you can share XAML and with these controls and know that it will just it will look right when it runs on the particular platform. And then there's a few controls that are completely unique. So the search box, the pivot is phone only, this sort of thing. The auto suggest box is phone only. The search box is tablet only. So there's a few that are appropriate only for those. So yeah, ways of sharing XAML. I've already taken you through a good demo with complete XAML pages being shared. You can create user controls. I haven't done that in this sample, but again, that's a good thing. You can create a user control, stick that down in your shared shared folder, and reuse across both. Absolutely, you could do that. And there's the state manager to handle the layout changes, and I showed you that already. So there's the code. So I got out of sequence here. So, and this is the, just to, reiterate the technique of using platform-specific styles. You can stick them into a resource dictionary that's only in the platform, merge it in, as you see with the XAML on the bottom there in your common app.xaml, and you've got a real nice way of just tweaking a few little things here and there so you've got platform-specific rendering happening for your shared XAML. You could even, have platform-specific whole styles. I didn't show you this, but this is another one. You could have a style. You could, in your resource dictionary, you could have styles called mon text block, and it's got a foreground color of deep pink on the tablet. Why on earth you want that? I don't know. And red on the phone. You could do that as well. So these are powerful techniques you can use for little platform-specific tweaks. And photo template there as well. And data templates as well. You know, in a data template, so you've got a list and you're referencing a data template which references the layout of items in the list. You could have that data template defined in the platform-specific resource dictionary, so you've got slightly different layouts, but the main page is actually shared. So all these techniques are available to you to handle a shared XAML. And I just showed you the demo already because I forgot. So the final thing I want to talk about is, here we are creating these great universal apps. And those of you who came to see me this morning when I was talking about networking, we'll have heard this already. But it's certainly true. It's one thing having an app that works well on both platforms, but it's going to be a poor user experience if the user uses your app on the tablet and enters some data and it gets stored away, and then they pick up the phone or they run out of the house, pick the phone in the pocket, and then later on they run up your phone version of your app and all that data they entered on the tablet, it's not there. It should be the same. So you need to think about sharing state across devices as well. So we've got this roaming folder, which is roaming data, which is here precisely to support this. And not only between your tablet app and your phone app, but if you've got the same app on multiple, most of us have got a laptop and a tablet, maybe even two tablets. You might have the same app on all of them. And all of those, we need to share data. And that's what the roaming folder is all about. So it's a folder and a settings dictionary. We've got three folders in storage now. We've got the roaming, local, and temp. Local is you stick stuff in there that's absolutely only platform-specific for that on that particular device. So you don't really want to put your app settings into there. You really want to put your app settings into the roaming settings. And if you stick stuff into roaming, then it gets synced up to OneDrive. And I was asked this morning, can the user see this stuff up in their OneDrive folder? And I found out since, no, they can't. It's not there, so it's not visible, and it doesn't come off your quota of storage you've got in OneDrive. It will go over to up to 100K, which isn't a lot, and that will be roamed across to the other platforms. And if the app is running, they'll get an event fired to say that the data has updated. So to use roaming settings, it's just a normal string key value object dictionary. So you can stick any object into the dictionary, give it a key value, stick any object into it that can be serialized, and then you can just fetch it out again by using the key to key into that dictionary. Pretty simple. The data obviously is stored immediately on the local device, so it's just like a local dictionary, but then it will be roamed up into the cloud at a time that frankly escapes me because I was trying to demo it this morning. No, it's kind of things like when it's on charge and when the lock screen's down, the phone will send it up to the cloud. It will do it as soon as it can, and likewise with the tablet. So yeah, you get this data changed event will fire in your app if your roaming data gets updated while your app is currently active. So in this case, you can actually react immediately and reload your state from roaming files, from roaming folder, or from roaming settings while your app is running. Obviously, your normal pattern will be when the app load is starting up, you'd read your stuff out of the roaming folder as well. Tips on this, it's only a small amount. So don't go, well, you can't actually store. I was actually trying to do a version of this morning, and I was trying to roam images. It's like, duh. It's like 100K? No, I don't think so. No, it's not going to work. So you need to keep it small. So you want the last used date, the last search that the user did, or preferences, this kind of thing. If you want anything bigger, then you need to be using either something in Azure or OneDrive or something like that. But it's good, it's the synchronization takes place in the background, so it's really good for customization settings and most recent activity. But definitely bad for synchronizing large amounts of data or instant syncing scenarios. So I'm going to try again. I tried a demo of this morning, which bombed, so cross your fingers for me. Sorry? I am a glutton for punishment, yes. I'm going to keep trying. I'm going to keep doing this talk until it works. So I've got one I prepared earlier, which did work in the speaker room, but not particularly quickly. So we'll see. We'll give it a go. So here is there's a bit of code that I couldn't get working in the time I had. So I've got this. What I've done with this is I have read what I did with these is I right-clicked and I associated the app. I go to the store menu, and I associated the app with the store. So it then goes, you go and choose a, I'm already signed in. You then can go and choose in, what? My login credentials are invalid or expired. Please click next to sign in with valid credentials. Okay. Well, at this point, I'm going to back out of that. So he wants me to enter my creds again. But then you reserve an app name, yeah? And you associate your app with that reserved app name, and you do that once for your Windows app, and you do the same operate thing for the phone app, and you use the same reserved app name. This enables all this shared roaming data magic. And so I'm going to run the Windows app. And I've also got a phone here, which is not talking to the DUV at the moment. Oh, yes, it is. Is that me? No, that's the emulator. You fool. Let's kill that. I'm done with that. Oh, I haven't even got it running. What the... So, what's this called? Project My Screen. USB Projection Client. Yes, there we go. Put that up there. Drag it down there. So there we go. We've got, this is the phone one. And I've got, it's called Fuel Saver. Fuel Tracker. TechEd NA 2014. So here we are. I've got a nice picture. Got last fill up. 26, let's do another fill up. Let's go back. Last fill up, what was the last one? It was 2000, so I'm going to new one, which is going to be 2500. Got done 500 miles on 50 gallons, and I don't know, it was an amazingly cheap $2 per gallon. So now we've got, there's our last fill up. And there's the history has gone on to there. So now I'm going to suspend the app. I'm going to put the lock screen down. And hopefully this guy over here. There's the three from before. And actually the live updating thing, I haven't been able to do that. So let's just restart that guy. again and see whether in the time I have been doing this, it has updated. But, you know, it probably hasn't because it just didn't work for me this morning. So let's run it again. Oh, yes. There we go. We got the forum there. Woohoo. So I'm ending on a high. Thank you. And if I got the data changed event as well, it would have happened in real time, but I didn't have time to get that working. Cool. All right, I'm chuffed now. So, OneDrive for more than 100K, you know, for bigger file sharing, or you can use Azure Mobile Services, or Azure, or whatever. So, if you need more storage for that, or sharing state that's bigger than that, then obviously you need to look at other solutions. So, in summary, I gave you an overview of the universal apps and what they are and what they aren't. Looked at the sharing folder and PCLs and when you want to use each of them. A lot of code sharing techniques, hashif and partial classes and all this sort of thing. I used MVVM. You do want to have good structure on in your apps and nice architecture to really make things easy for yourself. And we looked at various techniques for sharing XAML and for sharing state. And with that, there are some related sessions. Some of them are listed there. Please come along and see the other guys. I will be at Ask the Experts, not tomorrow, because I'll be there on my own. That's an error. It's actually tonight, Tuesday evening. So please come and chat to me there if you wish. There's various other Windows track resources you can go and sort out. And great resources like Channel I, including the Jumpstart, and lots of other good stuff. And the new MVA course will be up there as soon as I write these hundreds of assessment questions. And please, if you wouldn't mind, we'd love it if you could do an assessment so we can figure out how we're doing. And if you wish, you could scan that QR code right now, which if you've got a phone 8.1 device, you need to run up the camera, go to lenses, and get the Bing Vision lens, and then you can scan a QR code. And with that, I am done. So thank you very much for coming along. Thanks. If anybody's got any questions, if you want to step up to the mic, I'll be happy to try and answer them. Everybody's happy. All right, cool.
Will you upload this code anywhere? Will
I upload the code anywhere? Yes, I will. I will put it on my blog, andywiggley.com. So I'll put that example up there for sure. Yeah. Yeah. And actually, I have to share with you, this is quite a big moment for me because I have been working on the Jumpstart for like 4 months. And that was 2 weeks ago. And then right on the heels of that, I had TechEd. So I've been preparing these. And now, I'm done. I'm going away. I'm going to put my feet up and just have a good, relaxing time. So I just wanted to share that with you. So, yeah. All right. Thanks very much. Enjoy the rest of TechEd. Thanks a lot.